Taking Stock with Pim Fox and Carol Masser. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash.
Yes, money. But where does money come from? Has anyone ever written a biography of money? Well, indeed they have. And his name is Felix Martin, and he joins us now on the Ring Central phone line from London. His new book is entitled Money, the Unauthorized Biography. Felix Martin, great to have you with us here on Bloomberg.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Let's start off with what is money and how does it work? And if you could go back into time, I know you've done some big research. I was looking at those big stone tablets with the holes in the middle. What has that got to do with money?
Yeah, well, basically there are two ways of thinking about money. I mean, there have been in the history of economic thought. There's a sort of conventional way of thinking about it. And then there's a sort of less orthodox way of thinking about it, but actually it's one that turns out to be more accurate. And the conventional way, which I think lots of your listeners will be familiar with, is to say, you know, in the beginning, there wasn't any money. There was just barter. You know, people produced different things, and whenever they wanted to exchange these things with each other, it was a bit inconvenient. They had to find someone who had exactly what they wanted, and that person had to have exactly what you had, and you basically had to want them at the same time.
Right. Well, we're on Manhattan Island anyway, so we understand that, you know, there were some trinkets that were transferred in order to get title, supposedly, to this land.
You know that old story. So that's kind of, and then at some point in time, some bright spark came up with the idea of just, you know, choosing one thing that could be used as a so-called medium of exchange. So people didn't want that thing for its own sake. They only wanted it because it could be exchanged for other things. And that basically, in the conventional story, that's the invention of money. And in principle, it could be absolutely anything. But, you know, historically, it's usually been sort of gold and silver and stuff like that because they've got some useful properties, portable, durable, so on and so forth. So that's sort of the conventional story of where money comes from. But the funny thing is that, you know, if you actually read the historians and the anthropologists that have looked into all this stuff, that story turns out, you know, not to be true.
Right.
And it's also not a very accurate representation of what money is today. I mean, that's sort of obvious. But in fact, when we look at money today and we think, well, you know, of course, most of the money that we have is just, it's accounts at banks, right? It's the checking accounts that people hold at banks. That's sort of 97% of the money supply. It's something completely virtual, in other words. It's not something physical at all. And the truth is, actually, money has always been like that. We tend not to realize it because when we go out digging, you know, for money when we're on our archaeological expeditions and so on, what we find, of course, is coins. But actually, it was as true of past societies as it is today that money is just something virtual. It's a system of credit and clearing. And all these physical things, like those stone coins, funny old stone coins that you find on these Pacific islands, or the gold coins that were used in Europe in the Middle Ages, or, you know, the sort of stuff that you were talking about on Manhattan Island, those things are just tokens of that underlying system of credit and clearing, something completely virtual. And that's really what money is.
Felix Martin, I think it's fascinating that we're having you on and having this discussion at a time when we're all trying to figure out what Bitcoin is. Is it a commodity? Is it a currency? So I'm curious, based on, you know, your book, your knowledge, your history of looking into, you know, what is money, what would you say Bitcoin is?
I think Bitcoin is a very interesting phenomenon, but I think it's got sort of two aspects to it. And one of the aspects of it, I think, is actually a bit of a red herring. I don't think it's a very interesting thing. And the other one I think is very interesting. The not so interesting one is, funnily enough, the sort of Bitcoin phenomenon itself. In other words, you know, the idea of a privately issued money that's it's not issued by any government, and you know, it's the unit of account is the Bitcoin and so on. You know, there are lots of private monies out there in the world. There are actually thousands and thousands of them. You know, community currencies and these kinds of things, they've existed all through history. And
you had Scrip, for example, right? I mean, you had Scrip that was issued for a variety of things.
Exactly. Excellent example, that money that, you know, company shops used to issue and then employees used to be able to spend them there. So there's lots of examples of these throughout history, and that's not something particularly new. And they tend to come up against, you know, the problem that they can circulate in a small space amongst people who know each other, that kind of thing, but not very much further. And I suspect that that aspect of Bitcoin is going to come up against that kind of problem. But there's something else about Bitcoin which is very interesting, and that is the new payments technology which underlies it. It's so-called distributed public ledger technology. And that, again, if you look back at the history of money, these innovations in the way that you can make payments, the way that you can transfer credit balances from one person or one company to another, these kind of innovations can be very dramatic and very disruptive. And although I'm no expert on, you know, the particular technicalities of the Bitcoin technology, you know, if these guys in Silicon Valley who are investing in that are right, if it can be made secure, if it is as efficient and cheap as they say, I mean, that could be quite an interesting development.
Martin, Felix Martin, I'm wondering if you could just describe, because I was taken by those thick stone wheels that were lying at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, and how that, in a sense, was money, at least to the people that used that. I wonder if you could just describe that story for people.
Yes, certainly. I mean, as the listeners will know, money and finance can be a pretty dry topic. So I've tried to put as many picturesque stories as I was able to find in my book to sort of animate the history of it. And there is this famous example of this Pacific island of Yap in the middle of Micronesia, where they used these enormous stone disks, limestone disks with a hole in the middle, as their currency. And actually it was an American anthropologist, William Henry Furness, who first went there and documented it at the beginning of the 20th century. And when he went there, he was amazed to find this. He thought it was the most ridiculous sort of money he'd ever seen. You know, money's meant to be portable, but you could hardly carry these things around.
I mean, this was like, I saw the pictures, right? I mean, these things must be what, like 14, 15 feet tall at least?
That's right, the biggest ones, exactly. I mean, there's some pictures, there are pictures in the book exactly of the with people for scale. That's right, they're enormous, great big things. And he said himself, you know, eventually he thought maybe the reason they'd chosen it as money was because it was so difficult to move. He said, you know, when it takes four strong men to move the price of a pig, burglary cannot but be a disheartening occupation. So he thought that. And then he heard this story which you were referring to, even more surprising, which was that, you know, on occasion, these huge stone disks, this money, would fall out of the ship during a storm and sink to the bottom of the sea. But this didn't make any difference to the fact that the family that owned that particular coin would still keep the wealth that coin represented. In other words, they could still buy things with it, even though it was sitting at the bottom of the sea. And it's a sort of funny story, of course, and it's a bit silly, but it's also actually a serious story, because it shows you that these people really understood what money is. They weren't confused into thinking that you actually had to have the physical coin there in front of you, and you actually had to give it to someone else. That didn't matter. What matters, really, is the underlying system of credit and clearing that the coin represents. So they were actually pretty sophisticated people, I think, financially, those people on Yap.
So, Felix, having said all that, as you tackle what is money, what is then monetary policy in this context?
Well, I think actually this alternative way of thinking about money, keeping your mind very focused on the institution of credit and the system of clearing, is very important for understanding what monetary policy really is. You know, the whole history of money and monetary policy really revolves around this question of what a dollar, for example, means. What should it be worth? What does it actually mean to say I owe you $10, or that, you know, a certain number of dollars is owed as the national debt of the United States? And that's the question of the monetary standard, you know, because the dollar is just an abstract thing. It's completely abstract, right? It's just an abstract unit of measurement.
Well, I have to say, it's a fascinating conversation, and I think it comes at a very good time, like as I said, as we discuss so many things when it comes to Bitcoin and so on. Felix Martin, he's author of Money, the Unauthorized Biography, joining us on the RingCentral phone line from London.
Taking Stock, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2014, Bloomberg LP.